Walkis.
Mhm.
Bist du das mit diesem Geräusch?
Mhm. Störe jetzt nicht, bitte.
Oh, das klingt schön.
Mhm.
Bist du am Strand?
Mhm.
In Alexandroupolis?
Mhm.
Geht's dir gut?
Oh ja. Was höre ich da eigentlich, Marco?
Hast du es nicht erkannt?
Ein Wiederhopf für Mai?
Nein, einen Wiederhopf im Mai habe ich sogar mal fotografiert.
Wo?
In Tel Aviv.
Ah, und was ist das jetzt gewesen?
Das war der Warnruf eines Murmeltiers.
Das war ein Murmeltier? Aber das ist jetzt kein Murmeltier mehr.
Na, das ist ein Kier.
Merci, Cherie. Der Eurovision Song Contest Podcast aus Rauris, Alexandroupolis und Sarajevo.
Mir gegenüber sitzt Alkis Vlasakakis.
Mein Vis-à-vis ist Marco Scheuder.
Und das Thema heute, die unglaubliche Geschichte des ersten bosnischen Teilnehmers mit Fazla. Wir setzen unseren Bosnien-Schwerpunkt noch einmal fort und reisen von unserem friedlichen Meeresrauschen und Alpengetöses in die Zeit zurück, in die Zeiten, wo Schüsse fielen und wo es nicht so lustig war, in den Krieg Bosniens. Aber dazu später. Alkis, wir haben ja gehört, dir geht's gut.
Mir geht's gut und es gibt wirklich keine einzige Zeile News.
Ich auch nichts. Nicht. Ich gehe wandern. Also genau. Lest nach, wo ihr wollt.
Wir sagen euch nichts. Marco, wir haben gleich einen Gast.
Ja, wir haben Fazla zu Gast. Hintergrund ist, wir hatten ihn schon angefragt für ein Interview, als wir diese Bosnien-Episode machten, diese spezielle Episode, wo wir ein Land in den Vordergrund rückten, weil er wirklich eine unglaubliche Geschichte hat, nämlich von der allerersten Teilnahme noch mitten im Bosnienkrieg.
Und damals hat es leider nicht geklappt. Mittlerweile haben wir ihn erreicht, er hat sich wieder gemeldet und jetzt Ende Juni haben wir das Interview auch hinbekommen. Er ist gerade in Sarajevo eingetroffen, nachdem er auch wegen Corona in den USA festsaß und nicht nach Sarajevo konnte.
Wir haben ihn über Zoom erreicht und dementsprechend bitte um Verständnis für den Ton. Aber hören wir jetzt mal rein. Alkis, wir haben einen Gast and we have to change into English because I don't speak Bosnian at all.
We have Fazla. Mohamed Fazlagic with us. He's not sitting right next to us, but you're right now in Sarajevo, are you?
That is correct. I'm in Sarajevo since Sunday.
So how is life in COVID times in Sarajevo?
It's to be honest with you, it's a vibrant. People seem don't care much about it. First crisis went really well for people in Sarajevo. Now they are discipline, but people are not sitting at home anymore. They are trying to rejuvenate the life and ordinary routines to go back to normal, to the new normal.
To the new normal. So you have the same expression there as well. Okay. We are here, you know, our podcast is about the Eurovision Song Contest. And for the Bosnians, you are quite an historic person, so to say.
An icon.
An icon.
That's what they say, but I never took myself seriously. I was beneficiary of circumstances. So it just so happened that I was the first one who represented Bosnia and who, along with my team, who had to do little unordinary things in order to get to the Eurovision Song Competition.
We just had an episode about Bosnia a few weeks ago. And beforehand, I talked with Ismeta Dervos, who was the head of delegation when you took part at the Eurovision Song Contest in Mill Street. And she was here in Vienna for the Eurovision Song Contest 2015, where I met her the first time. And she explained us the whole story about the participation and also how important it was to bring Bosnia on the Eurovision map. So how did you experience this participation personally?
To be honest with you, I share her views that we had some sort of mission to represent Bosnia, actually to bring our problems that we were facing at the time, brutal aggression, crisis on every single level. We wanted to bring that story of ours to the living rooms of the ordinary Europeans. And the Eurovision Song Competition was a great platform for that, knowing that it's such a that has such a huge audience, that people are taking interest in the personal stories of the participants. At the same time, we knew that it was really difficult task for us to accomplish. Bosnia became independent country in 1992, May 22nd, I believe so. As such, we were able to participate in Eurovision Song Competition. For us, the most difficult task was how do we break out of the siege of the city, and then how to make it actually first to Slovenia for a semi-final of the Eastern European countries, and then to make it finally to Millstreet, Ireland. I'm sure familiar, you know how the competition developed. We first had 46 entries, jury chose only 12, and it happened so that song that I was performing won by landslide. Then we had to break out of the city, and the only way we could do that, it was running across the airport in the middle of the night. Airport was secured by the UNPROFOR forces, and we divided our delegation. We had about 15 to 18 people, I don't remember exact number. We divided delegation into three different groups, and my group was cut by UNPROFOR forces twice. We were returned to the Sarajevo, and then third attempt was successful, where we finally were able to get to the free territory. I don't know if you are familiar or if you remember that story, since it was really muddy and snowy. At the very first attempt, I lost my shoes in the mud. So basically in February, in the middle of the winter, I remind you, Sarajevo is Olympic winter city. I mean, you know, so it's a pretty high altitude and it's really cold in the winter. Barefooted, I made it to the mountain of Igmat back then until I got my dry socks and the shoes for the first time. From that point on, we went by high-checking, I mean, you know, different cars or trucks to made it to city of Mostar. In city of Mostar, we had the altercation with the Croatian defensive forces. We got captured for 24 hours. They were claiming that Bosnia is not country, so we shouldn't go and represent country like Bosnia, that it's going to fall apart, that country will never materialize. So fortunately, we were let go after 24 hours. And then when we finally arrived in Croatia, southern part of Croatia, we board the bus coach, and it took us 24 hours because of war theater to make it to Zagreb, Croatia. Once we made it to Zagreb, Croatia, it was much easier. We start re-recording our song. Finally, we were able to get new wardrobe, new clothes. Finally, we were able for the first time to eat as human beings. I mean, you know, because we were on humanitarian help, we were getting only pasta, which was really low quality pasta. I lost at the time, I think I had 35 kilos or close to 70 pounds less than I have right now. Wow. So, I mean, you know, I was really looking like somebody who just got from the concentration camp, which was Sarajevo at the time. It was open concentration camp. And then we finally start, you know, getting our wardrobe, getting proper nutrition, start going to studio, making songs and getting ourselves prepared for a first leg of the competition in Ljubljana, where we took second place.
If you remember these memories now, do you have the feeling it's a long time ago, or do you have the feeling it has just been yesterday?
Just being yesterday, and I'm going to tell you why is that. Because over the course of the last 25 years, at least I've given over 1,000 interviews. So this story is, I mean, you know, constantly reborning itself. And I, every single time when I talk about this story, something new pops in my mind. So it refreshes my memory. So to me, it's like story that never ends, that is still happening right now, as far as I'm concerned.
The lyrics of your song Svabol Svijeta, how did I pronounce it?
Better than 90% of Bosnians.
Which means in English, all the pain in the world has been a lot about war and pride, the lyrics, yeah? All the pain in the world tonight is in Bosnia. I'm staying to defy the fear. I'm not afraid to stand in front of the wall. I can sing, I can win. So the lyrics were written by Edin, I don't know if I pronounce him correctly, Edin Derviş Halidović.
Actually, what you just did, it was your literal translation of the song.
Yes.
English version is a little bit different. In reality, that song is love song. It was written to my back then girlfriend, who later became my wife and who I have a child with, daughter Sarah, who is now 16, 17 years old. So basically, we were saying, I mean, you know, the song starts, I'm sending this song to you to know I'm still alive, oh my love. That's the first verse. And then later song says, I'm not afraid to stumble and fall. I'll never stop to sing, they cannot take my soul. The whole world's pain is in Bosnia tonight. I'll stay here to challenge and to fight. And I'm not afraid to stumble and fall, they cannot take my soul.
It's a message to the world and to Europe.
It was a message to the world. We were talking about one phenomenon that people are not aware. Many female and children left Sarajevo with the humanitarian convoys, and males mostly were left here to defend. So we had a problem because we had broken families. Broken families worried about their male members, I mean, you know, who were defending, and also it was message to the world as well. That's why we made, I mean, you know, English version of that song. And the lyrics of the song was written by Fahruddin Pecikoza, person who did Leila for Hari Matahari in Athens in 2006. But music was written by Dino Derviş Halidović, commonly known as Dino Merlin.
Yes.
You were talking about you as a group. Is Fazla the band name, or is it just a short for your personal name as an artist?
My name is Muhammed Fazlagić, but nobody ever called me Muhammed in my life. Everybody called me Fazla because it's short version of my last name. And if you want to know meaning of that name, Fazla in Turkish means like many. And Aga is a title, like a lord or something like that. So my last name basically means many lords. So everybody called me by short version of my last name, Fazla. And then when we decided actually to go to Eurovision Song Competition, we didn't have a name for the band. And Petra just, I mean, you know, spit it out. He said, let's call it Fazla Band, and that's the easiest thing to do. So that's how we decided to name that band. We didn't basically have a time to think through how we're going to call our band.
Did you record before you went to Eurovision as well?
Yeah, I did. I had two songs that later on found its place on my first record, which was called Svabol Sveta. I recorded the first song. It was written by Hari Matahari, who, like I said, performed Leila, and Dino Derviş Halidović, which was called Kiša Ruši Grad, like rain is destroying city. And it's also sort of love patriotic song about my city. And then one was about one army unit that was fighting so hard. That was more patriotic song, but I didn't perform that song later on. It was just for the purpose of war, nothing else.
So, do you see yourself, your participation also as a patriotic act for Bosnia?
Of course. I mean, you know, whenever you are performing and representing your country, it has to do with the patriotism. I mean, you know, glory, money were definitely not an issue or subject of my interest at the time. For us was important, I mean, you know, to fly our flag among all other European countries and to finally show that we exist. Because media portraying definitely wasn't in sync with the reality that we were enduring on the ground. So I felt that art can be really powerful, and that our internal projection can portray properly and justly what we were going through at the time. And also I knew that we're going to have so many media attention that we're going to be able basically to say to everybody, this is what's going on in Bosnia, please, I mean, help us.
What is really would be interesting is, in our last episode, we heard a story, I don't know if that's right, that the conductor could not make it to Mill Street. So the Bosnian delegation was not complete in Mill Street. So people were missing, actually, who couldn't make it there. And what is also would be interesting is how did the other delegations of the other countries welcome you in Mill Street?
That is correct. Our conductor, Sinan Alimanović, at the time, he couldn't break out of the siege, and also aggression from the southern part of Bosnia performed by the Croatian forces start happening. So he didn't have any way to break out of the country. So Irish conductor Noel Calham was really kind and keen to help us out. So basically, I mean, you know, for the first time, he was conducting orchestra with us, with our song. We are grateful for his help. When it comes to hospitability of the Irish people, there is, I cannot describe enough how grateful we are for everything that they provided for us, starting with security, then with the measures. I mean, you know, they even rented a helicopter for us to go for rehearsals. They gave us beautiful hotel. I don't even know that it's hotel. I think it was some sort of castle. And we were really well received. When it comes to other delegations, we had issue with Croatian delegation because that was the official politics of the Croatian government, not to recognize Bosnia, not to give us any points, trying to ignore us as much as they can, and trying, I mean, you know, to kind of patronize us. So that was the only issue. Serbian delegation was there because they had a ban on all international appearances in sports and in arts, and they got kicked out of the Eurovision family at that time. But as far as others are concerned, very, very well received, very friendly. I don't think that any party was without us. Special affection for us were showing people from Greece, people from Ireland, from England. Sonia was performing for we had great relationship with your performer from Austria, and if I remember correctly, we gave Austria 12 points.
Yes, that's correct. Tony Vegas.
Tony Vegas, yeah. We had really, really kind of good relationship. And it was fun and joyful time. On the one hand, on the other hand, we were really worried because, I mean, you know, new aggression was breaking out. We had Serbians 92 attacking us, then Croats start attacking us in April of 93. We were all concerned about our families, about our parents. My uncle was imprisoned in a concentration camp in Čapljina, which is the most southern city in Bosnia. I was trying to get him out of there. So we had so much on our mind at the same time. So the Eurovision Song Competition was in a way relief for us. Just for a moment could take away, I mean, our thoughts that they were in Bosnia with our friends, families, I mean, you know, and patriotic forces.
Did you follow the Bosnian entries after your performance there?
Of course, they are all my friends. 94, Dejan Lazarević and Alma Čaržić with great vocal. Then my mentor was 95, Davorin Popović. He was my mentor. He took me under his wing when I started, I mean, you know, in a show business. Then my best friend in music is Hari Matahari, Hari Varešanović, who was kind of one who got me into pop music and everything else. Dina Merlin was performing, I believe, twice, one in Israel in 99 with a song with a French lady. I'm in really good relationship with all those people. We hear from each other all the time. Then another, my good friend Dean, performed also twice in the disco. And a couple of years ago, I believe he was in Poland. So Bosnia is a small country. We have, what, 3.5 million people. Pop and music scene is mostly located in Sarajevo. And we have this tradition that you just mentioned as far as coffee is concerned. So prior to the war, we had one coffee shop. It was called Estrada, which means basically show business, where we would gather every single day around noon time. And we were talking about concerts that are coming, about concerts that we just finished, about projects and everything else. So Bosnian pop scene, Bosnian music scene is really close community, and we really appreciate each other.
I had the luck to meet Dino Merlin in 2011 in Düsseldorf when I was part of the Austrian delegation, because we had he had start position one and we had start position two or something. I remember that very well, and he's a wonderful man. And I have been in Sarajevo, and what was so impressive for me in that city is if you walk through Bašćaršija, you're walking through the Orient. And then suddenly you are in the 19th century district, and suddenly you are in Vienna. And this is so overwhelming, because you really have the feeling this is the place where Oriental culture and Western European culture are melting together.
You are exactly right. And even you have one point where we said this is where East meets West. I was born and raised in an Austro-Hungarian part, which you just mentioned to me, you know. And I live right across of the presidency of Bosnia, which is also Austrian building.
Okay.
So my mom and rest of the family, they were born in the old town, which is the Turkish part of the town. And then as you go more toward west of the city, you can see Kingdom of Yugoslavia, then Tito's Yugoslavia, and now you have mother part. So Sarajevo is a city that basically in 15 minutes you can literally walk through the time from the 14th century until present day.
So I can really recommend all the listeners to go to visit Sarajevo. It's a really fabulous city. As soon we can travel again, that's the only part. You have not been in Sarajevo yet, Alkis.
I was only driving by on my way to Greece, because in the old times when you had to go to Greece, you had to cross the whole Yugoslavia, and you would be passing by Sarajevo all the time. So I always saw that sign, Sarajevo, but we never did the turn.
He should do it, no?
All I can tell him is basically that nobody's perfect.
He's right, yes. But I will go with him once. Or Bosnia is going to win the Eurovision Song Contest,
exactly.
And then we will go to Sarajevo. But Bosnia is not taking part in the last years. How do you see this decision or this problem of the Bosnian television? I think it's because of financial reasons.
It's not because of financial reasons. You know that national television is financed by the national government of Bosnia. Since 2014, in the national government, we have two political parties that they are not willing. It's Croatian Democratic Union and Serbian Social Democratic Party or something like that. The presidents of those two parties are Dragan Čović and Milorad Dodik. They are not willing to finance anything that carries names of Bosnia and Herzegovina or that promotes Bosnia and Herzegovina in any way. So basically, they took 300 million euros from the national budget. Basically, that was financing 13 national cultural institutions that they were carrying name of Bosnia and Herzegovina. Among others, it's Bosnia National Television. So basically, that is the reason why we are not going. It's not that we don't have money, but current government doesn't want to set aside money for Bosnia to be able to participate in a competition like Eurovision Song Competition, because they don't want Bosnia to be seen at the Eurovision Song Competition.
That's sad.
It's more than sad. It's very unpatriotic, because those people are getting money from they are taking benefits from this country. In return, they don't want to give anything back to this country.
Because the songs from the 2000s, like Pokušaj, Valaka, or Hari Matahari, or Dino Merlin, they were fabulous artistic entries. That was high-level music, actually.
The moment they realized that, they decided not to finance that anymore, because they don't want Bosnia to get any positive any positive feedback from Europe. And it's not, this is not something I'm trying to make up. I mean, you know, they are being very outspoken about it. They are very public. They are basically forming Bosnian government, and on a daily basis they are saying that they wish that Bosnia and Herzegovina as a country never existed.
So you went back again after Eurovision to Bosnia, but later on you went to the USA, and I read that you had a football career.
So basically I was a soccer football player all my life. Like I said, I'm coming from the football family where my uncle was captain of the Yugoslav national team in 1968 that took silver medal in Rome, Italy, playing against host country Italy in two legs. And then my brother was also a football player. Currently he's the director of the Bosnian National Olympic Committee. So as a family in Bosnia, we are known as a football family. So since singing basically happened by accident to me, I didn't even know until I was 19 years old that I was a good singer, and was encouraged by Hari Matahari, by Zdravko Čolić, Dina Merlin, and all those people to start getting into singing. I was still kind of attached to the football, just at the smaller scale. And then after war was over, I had opportunity to go to United States to start studying at one American university called Sullivan University. So I decided to go there. And as I was studying, I decided also to put together some football school for a youth program for boys and girls 9 up to 19. And I did it like for some 25 years doing that. And then I decided to come back to Bosnia in 2018. But basically, my whole life is connected with the football. I'm a big fan, and also I went to attend all those licenses, UEFA licenses, America licenses, and I was coaching and really enjoying that part. Along the football, while I was in the United States, I got my bachelor degree in business management at Sullivan University. Then I went to Patterson School of Diplomacy at the University of Kentucky for my master's, and then I decided to go to University of Louisville to pursue my doctoral degree in sociology, so-called applied sociology. And then recently I came back to Bosnia, and I do some political work, political consulting and advising, I mean, you know, for a current president of the Bosnian Herzegovina called Željko Komšić.
Are you still singing?
My last singing was about 12 years ago. I did another record called Zelena Rijeka, which means Green River. And that album also was pronounced the album of the year. The Zelena Rijeka song was the hit of the year, and I was singing of the year 2007-2008. 2010, I decided to go to my doctoral studies, and then I kind of said to myself, you cannot be a professor at university and still be, I mean, you know, singer. So, I mean, you know, I had to give up on singing.
Okay.
But what a shame.
Yeah. Well, you know, I like football.
Maybe I changed my mind.
I like football. Alkis does not like football, but we both like singing. So, but I'm a big fan of, you know, I'm from the Netherlands originally, so I'm mostly orange, yes.
I played for 1 year in Holland.
Oh, where?
In Rotterdam. It was third division and second division club called Tedero. And the last 10 or 15 years, I believe, that club merged with another club, so they got different name today. But I lived in Rotterdam, right next to the Feyenoord Stadium.
So, yes, my mom is born and near the Feyenoord Stadium. So that's where my mom is from.
It's called Rotterdam Zuid, right?
Yes. And so you should join the Eurovision Song Contest in Rotterdam. You know the city.
I was going to perform this year at Eurovision Song Competition, and I was invited by the hosts. And we were going to be there for April 10th because they did a promotion of the book called History of the Eurovision Song. And in that book, they featured the 10 most remarkable delegations. So among those 10, it happened to be our delegation, one of them. Well, so I was going to go there, but unfortunately, COVID, I mean, you know, changed everybody's plans. Eurovision Song was canceled. I didn't travel from, you know, I got stuck in United States, so I couldn't come either to Bosnia or to Holland. But invitation is extended for next year. So next year I'll be there for sure.
So we'll meet each other. That's great. Yeah.
Of course.
On the end of our show, we always have three questions, and we ask all artists who visit us. So let's start with our three questions, Alkis.
The first question would be about this year's entries that haven't been performing at Eurovision. Did you follow them?
I did, and actually I was part of the jury.
Did you like one of those songs especially?
I did, and I gave 12 points to North Macedonia.
Okay, so a good neighbor.
Actually, we are not neighbors.
Yes, that's true. That's true. But that's true.
There's good, three countries in between us.
Good choice of music.
Well, in our podcast, the Icelandic entry did win with our listeners.
Good. Also, I like Russian. I like Russian song. It was retro 80s or something like that. It was kind of, I liked it.
Yes, that's a really funny song. That's true. The second question is a little bit stupid because because normally we ask the artists about the anecdotes they remember most about their participation or what happened at Eurovision. But with you, of course, it's a special story because that's your story, actually. But if you remember, you went on stage in Mill Street and the camera started. What was for your first thought you had in mind?
There's no stupid questions. There's only stupid answers. the moment when I went to the stage, I was thinking what the people in Bosnia are doing and how many people in Bosnia are able to see and how many people in Bosnia at that moment we were making proud.
Because they sometimes did not have the electricity, right, to watch television?
They did not have electricity, but I don't know. It wasn't subject of this interview. They are currently BBC Film 4 and Vico Films from Ireland are making a film feature, motion picture about my entry in a Eurovision Song Competition. Film is going to be called Sarajevo Calling. So they did research. And they did research talking to the people if they were watching Bosnian entry in 1993. So what they came up with, its conclusion of the research, that in New York, people are remembering exactly where they were during the 9/11. In Bosnia, people are remembering exactly where they were during the Eurovision Song Competition in 1993.
Wow. I got juice gums now. Yeah. Okay, last question.
The last question is, what is your favorite entry for Eurovision ever from any year?
I got two or three favorites, but my vote will go to the ladies that performed in Zagreb 1990s from Spain. And I believe it was a song called Bandidos.
Bandidos, yeah. And they had to start over because the...
That's right.
Okay, dear Fazla, thank you so much for being with us in our podcast. And as we always say at the end, merci, chérie.
I just say thank you, and I hope I'm going to meet you in person. That's what I said.
Yes, I hope so too. See you in Rotterdam next year, hopefully. Kvala.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you one more time. Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Merci, chérie. Die kleine Song Contest-Geschichte am Schluss. Alkis, was hast du mir trotz Strandurlaubs, nein, du arbeitest dort, ich weiß eh, mitgebracht?
Ich denke mal, wir sollten das ein bisschen vertiefen, was Fasler eigentlich schon erzählt hat, nämlich dieser Vorentscheid in Ljubljana. Richtig. Und zwar war es so, dass nach 89 ja plötzlich eine ganze Menge Länder mehr zur Verfügung standen, die alle teilnehmen wollten beim Eurovision Song Contest. Und bei diesen ganzen neuen oder nicht ganz so neuen osteuropäischen Ländern konnten natürlich nicht alle mitmachen. Damals gab es noch keine Semis.
Ja, die gibt es ja seit 2004.
Genau.
Ja.
Genau, und es gab die Regel, dass eben, nachdem der Song Contest nicht allzu lange dauern sollte, immer nur einen Teil der Leute, Länder teilnehmen sollten. Die 7 Länder, die sich eben beworben haben, teilzunehmen, von denen wurden eben 3 ausgewählt in einem eigenen Vorentscheid in Ljubljana.
Also eigentlich ein Halbfinale, noch nicht im Fernsehen übertragen sozusagen.
Genau, das wurde im Studio quasi produziert, in einem Fernsehstudio von Radio Televisia Slovenia in Ljubljana. Und es gab eben sieben Teilnehmerinnen aus Slowenien, aus Bosnien, aus Kroatien, der Slowakei, Estland, Ungarn und Rumänien. Und von den sieben wurden eben drei weitergereicht in das tatsächliche Finale. Und das war damals die erste Teilnahme von Slowenien mit 1X-Band.
Oh ja.
Ja, kennst du noch?
Ja, so vage.
Ja, genau. Kroatien mit Put, Don't Ever Cry, Fasla. Und die Slowakei kam eben nicht weiter, Estland kam nicht weiter. Über Ungarn, das nicht weiterkam, haben wir bei der Episode mit Kati Wolf schon gesprochen.
Richtig, ja.
Genau. Und Rumänien, Dida Dragan, war auch am Start und kam nicht weiter.
In Rumänien durchaus eine bekannte Star.
Ja. Ja, und das war jener Vorentscheid, zu dem dann eben die bosnische Delegation quasi geflohen ist über das Flugfeld, was Fasl eben auch erzählt hat. Das war dieser eine Vorentscheid. Das war so wichtig, dorthin zu kommen.
Und ich glaube, das war auch der allererste europäische Vorentscheid, osteuropäische Vorentscheid. Genau. So hat man das auch, glaube ich, genannt. Weil,
genau, ja, das war ein osteuropäischer Vorentscheid.
Ja, man musste sich daran gewöhnen. Der Eurovision Song Contest hatte sich einfach noch nicht auf das Ende des Kalten Kriegs im Grunde eingestellt und dass es nicht mehr ein zweigeteiltes Europa gab.
Ne? Genau, und diese Lösung, die dann über die 90er hinaus quasi gegolten hat mit dieser Einführung der Regel, dass eben nur die erfolgreichsten Länder im nächsten teilnehmen konnten. Das war auch so eine halbgare Geschichte. Also ich bin dann schon sehr froh, dass die Semis kamen. Erst das erste Semifinale und dann eben zwei Semifinale.
Interessant finde ich ja, dass ausgerechnet drei ehemalige jugoslawische Länder weiterkamen, nämlich Slowenien, Bosnien und Kroatien, die ja wiederum eine Song Contest Tradition als früheres Jugoslawien alle drei hatten. Und die wirklich neuen Staaten, Slowakei, Estland, Ungarn und Rumänien, die noch nie bei Eurovision waren, eigentlich rausgeflogen sind. Ja. Sehr interessant. Ja, und wie gesagt, Dida Dragan, also die ist in Rumänien sehr bekannt. Ja.
Mhm. Ja, danke. Das war meine kleine Geschichte.
Schön, und ich würde vorschlagen, ich gehe wieder zu meinen Murmeltieren und Kühen und ich glaube, da oben habe ich noch über Steinböcke und Gämse gesehen.
Ich lege mich wieder ans Meer.
Und du legst dich wieder ans Meer. Schatzi.
Ja.
Merci, chérie. So, how do you pronounce your name correctly? Mohamed Fazlagic.
Fazlagic. You did it like you are born and bred Bosnia. Missing Link.